Chapter 017. Kishot Acerola Orion Heart Underblade. The iron-blooded, hot-blooded, yet cold-blooded vampire. The legendary vampire. The slayer and empress of aberrations. A vampiress. Adorned with dazzling gold hair and a chic dress. A beautiful, blood-chillingly beautiful vampire. No other words were needed. But if I were forced to find them, she was the final nemesis of her thrall. Yours truly. Kishot. I shoved the barricade away and opened the PE shed's steel door, only to find that the sun had already set outside, and that she stood there in the middle of the athletic field. The ground under her feet was cracked. It must have been from the impact of her landing. In fact, the field had caved in around her to the point where her ankles had been swallowed by it. Those bat-like wings were nowhere to be found on Kishot's back. As her thrall, I could intuit that she must have traveled from the abandoned cram school's roof to here in a single, standing leap. She'd waited for the sun to set, and then she'd jumped to where I was. Still, her feat could only be described as tremendous. I'd congratulated myself for a standing jump of a measly 60 feet, but Kishot had jumped miles like it was nothing at all. Of course, it wasn't fair to compare her jump to mine, since I'd been aiming to land in that sandpit, not trying to break any records. But if you asked me if I could jump from the field back to the abandoned school, my answer would be no. I closed the shed's steel doors behind me, with Hanekawa still inside. The door probably didn't pose even a minor obstacle to Kishot, but closing it still afforded some comfort. "Don't say a word," I whispered to the other side. Then I took a step forward. Toward Kishot.
"Hey,"
I said as I approached her. "I didn't think you'd be the one coming to find me." I'd assumed it would be the hardest part. Figuring out a time. Figuring out a place. Unlike my bouts with dramaturgy, episode, and guillotine cutter, Oshino wouldn't be there to mediate. But we were both vampires. A master and a servant. Her thrall. That Kishot came to me at almost the exact moment the sun set seemed to mean that in her perfect form, she was thoroughly aware of my every deed. Where I was, what I was thinking, she was thoroughly aware of it all. Kishot now looked at me with even colder eyes than usual, and began by pulling her legs out from inside the field. First right, then left.
"But once, my servant,"
she spoke next,
"I understood thy feelings in the time the sun was out. The cause of thy anger, too. While I wished to sleep, I forced myself to think. I believe I acted thoughtlessly, and that I had not paid thee the consideration due a former human. And that is why I will apologize to thee but once. Return to my side,"
Kishot said. Her voice was beautiful, and it was with that alluring voice that she tempted me.
"Live with me. I had my life saved by thee. And while I may think thee a strange creature, that is precisely why I trust that we could live together. Rather than return to being human, will ye not live with me for eternity?"
"I refuse." I looked back into Kishot's cold eyes, preparing myself for the worst, and said the words. "You ate a human. That on its own is enough for me."
"Had ye known that, would ye not have saved me? Ye'd have abandoned me, leaving me for dead?"
"Kishot, I didn't know anything then. No." I shook my head. "I did know from the beginning. I was just keeping myself from looking at the facts. I had thought to die for your sake, which meant that I was permitting you to eat humans. But I didn't actually picture other people dying. While my actions may have been beautiful, they weren't right. It didn't matter if I died, but it felt awful when other people died. That was an idiosyncratic view, come to think of it. How could I possibly expect it to stand up to scrutiny?"
"I thought ye might speak thus,"
Kishot said with a smile.
"Those were the words I wished to hear from thee."
"Kishot."
"And now I am free of doubt, my servant. I, too, had an inkling from the very beginning that thou were such a one."
"Such a what?"
"I had known that thy kindness would only last while I was weak.
I'd have no interest in her once she became a perfect existence, she had suspected. There was even a tinge of bitterness in Kishot's words.
It was not because of who I am. Ye'd have saved anyone, so long as they were weak.
I don't go this far for everyone I know. You realize I'm doing this because it's you. That's what Hanakawa had said. But me? Even if it wasn't Kishot there, I would have...
And so, I had thought it may turn out like this. Incidentally, know that I saved thee as thyself. A heroic soul ready to cast away his own life for my sake deserved better than death by my hands.
I deserved better?
And my gratitude is thine for doing thy share to repay the favor. Now come closer, my servant. Do ye know already, to judge from thy expression? Indeed, by slaying me with thy hands, ye return to the ranks of humans that ye love so.
I gulped. I realized anew that she saw through me, and also just how vast the difference in power between us two was. Facing her here, one-on-one, would be different. It wouldn't play out like any of my fights against the trio. I felt intimidated and overwhelmingly tense, like I was being strangled by the air around me. That was it. The battle that was about to unfold was, in no uncertain terms, a fight to the death. The biggest difference of all. Nothing prevented it now. On top of that, I was facing the Aberration Slayer.
Don't feel too despondent, my servant,
Kishot said. She looked the slightest bit... happy?
I'm in the best condition I've been in during my 500 years alive. When I faced those three at the same time, not only was I under the weather, they took me by surprise. I certainly hadn't expected my heart to have been stolen. It is rare for one of my class.
What is?
Having to try,
she said, beckoning me.
In all honesty, even if I am unsure of what will happen, but as I face the most powerful of all the foes I have fought until today, there is no need for me to hold back. It is that I am happy about.
I can't promise I'll be able to meet your expectations. I worked up my courage and began to walk toward her. Normally, I would have run away instead. But this was different. I had a dear friend at my back, sitting inside that PE shed. There was someone I needed to protect. I couldn't run away. I had to face it. Just watch, Hanakawa. I'm not going to look pathetic in front of you. After all, I'm a former human. Formerly food for you.
Fret not. While I will be killing thee with malice and enmity, I shall give myself a handicap. What was it that boy liked to say? Ah, yes. A 50-50 fight. I shall set such rules.
'Tis a game. Kishot hopped as she said the words. A moment later, she was directly in front of me, so close our legs nearly became entangled. In her perfect form, she was taller than me. She looked down on me from where she stood.
I will not fly. I will not hide myself in the shadows. I will not turn to mist. I will not turn to darkness. I will not vanish. I will not transform myself. I will not use the power of my eyes. I will not even generate matter. Needless to say, I will not use my enchanted sword Kokoro Watari, the Aberration Slayer. In other words, I will not use any of my active abilities as a vampire. Ye have my word. Of course, feel free on thy part. But transforming thy body from the arms forward is about all, is it not?
And that I was only able to do because Hanakawa had been kidnapped. Now that my mind was closer to the human side, it seemed unlikely that I could even transform my fingers. The story would be different if I had Dramaturki's force of will or experience, but I was a beginner who had neither.
Normally, as thy mistress, I would be able to exert some degree of control over the actions of my servant, but I shall not do that either. I promise not to do such a boorish thing. We shall fight only with our refined, pure powers of immortality. That should negate any need for experience. We will stand here at this distance and fight to the death. Would that not make it a 50-50 fight?
You must really be bored. I glared at Kishot's face, which loomed over mine. You're going to do all that just so you don't have to hold back? I mean, isn't that exactly what we'd call letting your guard down?
Letting my guard down? Unfortunately for thee, I am not so foolish as to let my guard down against my own thrall. But if I did not offer thee a fighting chance, there would be no game, would there? I do not wish to hold back. But my foe abandoning the fight in the middle of the match would not do at all.
Then she held out her hands, ready to fight. Her hands were open and flat, set to chop. She prepared herself to fight at our super close range. I tried doing the same. An open hand was better for the situation than a closed fist. When you have the physical strength of a vampire, the difference in damage that a fist can inflict compared to a chop is practically negligible. In that case, an open hand is more versatile and easier to use. I then looked at my surroundings. While the sun may have set, it was not late into the night. No one would be inside the school, but there was no guarantee that we wouldn't have witnesses, as far as we were from houses. I had to settle this quickly. But as I thought that, Kishot spoke.
What nerve, my servant. Taking thy eyes off of me at this distance. Do not worry, those three are already gone. And as for any regular human, none could even approach me at my full power. If someone does see me, I shall be no more than a rumor around this town.
A rumor? A street rumor. An urban legend. Idle gossip. Rumor would give rise to rumor. And rumors had a funny way of coming true.
Of course, that doesn't go for those rations in the shed behind thee.
Kishot. I have something to ask you too. One last question of my own.
Oh? Then let us have it. A souvenir to take with thee to the underworld. I'll answer anything. Just ask.
What are humans to you?
Food.
I see. She answered without a hint of hesitation. And the answer undid the final knot that held me back.
And I wanted to hear that from you too. I wanted to hear those words come out of your mouth.
Then I moved. And so did Kishot.
I need you to die, Master!
Prepare to die, servant!
Perhaps it was to keep the situation at 50-50. Though Kishot appeared to move at the same time as me, she'd allowed me the first move. The edge of my open hand swept sideways toward her face, decapitating the top half of her head, sending it flying, blonde hair and all. But then, as if she'd anticipated the move, Kishot unleashed a chop that caused my skull to explode. We had both used the same technique, but the power she displayed seemed to be on a different level. While the point of impact was far smaller than Dramaturgy's fist, that smaller size seemed to concentrate the force behind it to one spot. Each of us had sent the other's head flying. Normally, the fight would end at that point. But neither Kishot nor I was human. We were monsters. It didn't matter if our heads went flying or if our brains were destroyed, and there was no time limit. My consciousness and my vision were severed just for a fraction of a moment, and I immediately regenerated back to my original state. Neither of us showed any signs of damage. Kishot was laughing. Joyfully, she laughed, with such vibrato it sounded as if she was trying to harmonize with herself.
How wonderful! This is it! This is the thrill of two vampires fighting to the death! More! More! More, servant!
Shut your mouth!
Chops crossed paths with chops. They were not only aimed at the head, but at the body and the limbs as well. My chops gouged pieces from Kishot's body. Kishot's gouged pieces from mine. Each of our bodies continued to barbarically bore through the other. Of course, I wasn't numb to the pain. Pain came across to me as pain. My thoughts halted when my brain was destroyed. My breathing halted when my lungs were destroyed. And my circulation halted when my heart was destroyed.
While I'd become a vampire, my body's makeup hadn't changed. My regeneration, recuperation, immortality. It was just that those things were something else. But that was enough.
Yes, keep screaming! How I love to hear the virile howls of men!
Just as I had expected, Kishot's breasts were bouncing wildly. But her barrage of attacks was even wilder. And throughout it all, she roared with laughter. I felt pain. And surely Kishot must have too. It wasn't as if she was divorced from her sense of pain. Yet she betrayed no signs of it. Not even a blink of the eyes. She didn't grit her teeth as I did. Nor did she scream as I did. It didn't matter what part of her I destroyed. Her brain I destroyed. Her lungs I destroyed. Her heart I destroyed. But she seemed not to care and continued her deafening laughter. Her eyes were cold. Yet she looked happy. It was a gruesome laugh. Damn it!
Hold now, servant. It is too early to utter such a line. Why so vexed when we appear to be evenly matched?
Did that mean she was used to the pain? Was the pain of her body being torn to pieces nothing more than a familiar sensation? If so, these last 500 years, what kind of carnage and bloodshed had she seen? What did she survive? Our difference in experience. Difference in combat experience. But I would use my sheer willpower to close that gap. Or at least, that's how these stories usually went.
Aye, that's it. Scream! I want to hear thy roar!
Stop acting like this is easy for you, Kishot!
How sad it makes me to know that I'll never hear ye call me that again.
Our fight went nowhere. No matter how much blood was sprayed, no matter how much flesh was scattered, it all evaporated before hitting the ground and regenerated in the time it took to do so. And so, neither of us incurred damage. For my part, death by shock from all the pain seemed within the realm of possibility. But perhaps a vampire's immortality brought you back to life, even in that case. Still, it was strange. Our powers of immortality were evenly matched. Kishot had the edge in attacking. This in itself wasn't strange. But honestly, I hadn't thought my chops were capable of wounding Kishot to such an extent. I'd been convinced that I was at an overwhelming disadvantage when it came to that. But in truth, my attacks were destroying her body without even landing that hard. It was like destroying a chunk of tofu. She looked like a ghoul as she smiled with her cheeks torn away. And as she did, she answered my question. Master and servant. She seemed to know exactly what I was thinking.
In fact, my servant, a vampire's defenses are not terribly high. Of course, they are leagues beyond our foods, mere human defenses. But so low they seem inversely proportionate to our outstanding offensive powers. Were we to rate a vampire's offenses at 100, our defenses are capped between 10 and 20. Guess why, my servant?
Even Kishot's address was being restored each time, because she was creating it at will. The same did not go for me, though. My clothes were plain clothes. My torso was now nearly bare. Because our immortality equals our defense?
Exactly,
Kishot said.
So there's no need for thee to defend against my attacks in this battle. Focus only on offense and tear my body apart.
What are you, a masochist?
I shan't deny the charge.
At times, our hands would run into each other. When this happened, my hand was the one that was destroyed. There was no room for little tricks here. But that wasn't to say there was any room for big ones. We would go until her or my immortality gave out. If not, we'd go until her or my spirit broke. That was how this battle was being fought. Or no. Not really. This barren fight was nothing more than an opening skirmish. It was like play to Kishot. And while it may not have been play to me, it still felt like I was only just getting ready. I knew. I understood. And I could feel it. How I could kill Kishot Acerola Orion Heart Underblade. The way to slay her. Now that I was actually facing her, my instincts told me how. Whether it was my human ones or my vampire ones, I didn't know. But in any case, I intuited the way. Upon further thought, Kishot had pretty much told me herself, which meant that the method would work for sure. I knew exactly what I had to do. But I wasn't being given the chance. Why, you ask? Because while it was the way for me to slay Kishot, it was also the way for Kishot to slay me. That was why this was fun for her. It was a game. Kishot could probably kill me whenever she felt like it. Of course, this didn't mean she was letting her guard down. She just wanted to relish her famous full powers for as long as she possibly could. And that meant there was a chance that Kishot would show an opening. Until then, I needed to trade blows standing in place and keep up the futile exchange of death for death and regeneration for regeneration.
Ha! I like it, servant. Ye've grown quite the backbone. Regardless of thy power as my thrall, most vampires with thy inexperience would not be able to disregard their lives so easily.
That's how it's supposed to go, right? Well, I'm happy to hear that you're pleased.
And all the more reason 'tis a pity. Perhaps ye could have become a legend like me.
A legend? Why would I want to be a legend? Just the thought of someone I've never met knowing my name creeps me out.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
The two of us conversed as we continued to fight to the death. We talked as we gouged chunks from each other's bodies. Almost completely unlike the previous day's conversation, up on the top of the roof of the abandoned cram school, this was a wild, reckless exchange where we seemed to be saying whatever came to mind. I wasn't able to laugh. While Kishot laughed, her smile, devoid of affection, was nothing like the night before's. Though it felt like I was on the verge of being blown back by her attacks, I planted both of my feet and stood my ground. The punishment I took was hellish. My body, smashed into dust, was mended back to its original state by the time the wind carried it away, only to be smashed again, mended again, smashed once more, and eternally mended. That kind of hell. It was like one of the circles of hell. When I looked at it that way, it didn't seem like an overstatement to say that I was in hell.
By the way, servant, perhaps ye'd be interested to hear this. There's no point in thy knowing, as ye'll soon be departing this world.
What is it?
Dramaturgy, episode, and of course, guillotine cutter. All of the vampire hunters who have ever tried to kill me, as well as that floridly shirted boy, never seem to know. But in truth, I too am a former human.
Kishot said this and laughed. She said the words as her head was severed and regenerated.
A former human, like thee and Dramaturgy.
What? You weren't a pure-blooded vampire? I'd been convinced she was. But now that she mentioned it, she'd never said so.
I've forgotten nearly everything that happened to me during my time as a human, but it seems I belong to a reasonably well-off family. The aristocracy, as they say. And this dress seems to be a vestige of that time. Though once a vampire has been alive for over 300 years, pure or thrall hardly matters.
Okay, so what?
Well, I had forgotten for quite some time, and only remembered yesterday as I spoke with thee. I was reminded that I, too, hesitated before eating a human for the first time.
Yeah, and?
Thou too,
Kishot said as she stopped attacking me for a moment.
All it takes is eating one human, and thy guilt will vanish.
I stopped attacking as well. The wounds we had suffered healed in the blink of an eye.
Dramaturgy was a former human as well. And while he was a hunter of vampires, he too ate humans. True, he stuck to the ones bound for execution provided to him by Guillotine Cutter's church.
Just because they were going to be executed doesn't mean it's okay to eat them. Especially if they were only judged guilty by Guillotine Cutter's church.
Indeed. But if we are to speak of what is right to eat and what not, why limit that standard to humans? Thou shalt not eat cow. Thou shalt not eat pig. Thou shalt not eat whale. Thou shalt not eat dog. Not to mention Guillotine Cutter. Do humans not disagree on these points across cultures? Furthermore, I am a vampire who slays aberrations. Eating one human is enough to sate me for a month, a mere dozen a year. That is but 6,000 humans over my 500 years alive. Is that such a large number in view of history? How many humans have other humans killed in that time?
That's just sophistry.
I am by no means a threat to this world. The effect I have on it is minuscule. And yet, ye insist I die because I eat humans?
Asked Kishot.
A human's hunger is far more insatiable than mine.
We die if we don't eat. Not just vampires, humans too. Not just humans, but animals too. Even plants, which I wanted to become. Unless you're inorganic. Unless you're stone or iron. You sacrifice other lives. That's not the problem, Kishot, I said. And you're right, I insist. You eat humans, so you must die. Ah, Kishot replied. And her cold eyes slowly began to narrow. Kishot, I'm human.
I see. I am a vampire.
Then our battle was supposed to resume. We were futilely returning to our futile exchange of death for death and regeneration for regeneration. But then...
Hold on a second!
A voice rang out to my back. It reverberated through Naowetsu High's athletic field. I knew immediately that it was Hanekawa's voice. And now that I heard it, I realized that I'd also heard the steel door of the PE shed opening just moments earlier.
Araragi! Something's not right here!
As Hanekawa spoke to me from behind, my only thought was that if anything, there was something wrong with her. How could she leave the PE shed under these circumstances? Did she have no sense of fear? I knew in my mind that my body was immortal. But even then I felt like I was on the verge of a nervous breakdown just standing in front of Kishot. Hadn't I told her Kishot could destroy concrete blocks simply by looking at them? So why? Why was she showing herself? Hanekawa! It doesn't matter! Just hide! I knew how risky it was, but I turned around. No, actually, run away! Just run away! Leave this place! Get as far away as you can from here!
No! Araragi!
Hanekawa seemed flustered. Hanekawa, always calm and composed, even when I'd done my best to hurt her, even when Episo blew a hole through her flank, even when Guillotine Cutter had her hostage, was clearly shaken.
Something's been all wrong for a while now, Araragi. I think we're still overlooking something hugely important.
Overlooking? Could we be possibly overlooking something even now? No, there was no way. Only one thing remained for me to do.
Shut up!
Kishot yelled. Kishot seemed flustered as well. This was quite the unexpected reaction. Well, I'd seen Kishot act flustered just once. That time when I was still human and made to abandon her. That time when I made the right decision. That was when she became flustered. She cried, she pleaded, she apologized.
This isn't thy place to speak, Ration!
Kishot glared. And with that one motion, the steel door of the PE shed behind Hanekawa went flying. That was the power of her eyes. Unlike when I kicked it down, it seemed impossible to salvage. Scrunched up like a ball of aluminum foil, the door had disappeared into the shed. The ground around Hanekawa was now cracked into pieces. Everything around her and behind her had been erased. Just by being looked at. With just a single look. The iron-blooded, hot-blooded, yet cold-blooded vampire. The Aberration Slayer. This display left even Hanekawa speechless. But I understood. I already understood. I knew. I knew how precarious she could be. Tsubasa Hanekawa. I knew that something like that wasn't going to stop her. She glared right back, firmly even, at Kishot Acerola Orion Heart Underblade.
Miss Heart Underblade, could you be...
Stay out of this, lowly human!
Kishot looked at Hanekawa again. She looked at her. She was using the power of her eyes, the power of a vampire's eyes, but an opening, which hadn't even been hinted at during our futile fight to the death, finally showed itself. Of course, unlike me, Kishot certainly had room to take her eyes off of our fight. But right now was different. now was different. As she looked at Hanikawa, she was flustered, openings everywhere. Kishot! Screaming her name, I jumped in between her and Hanikawa. I took the full brunt of her eyes. As my entire body was blown away and scattered, I sunk my teeth into her throat. I sunk my teeth into her, my elongated canines, my fangs. A way to slay Kishot. A way to slay a vampire. A way for a vampire to slay a vampire. Once you thought about it, it couldn't be more self-evident. My instincts told me how. I didn't know if they were my human ones or my vampire ones, but still. In fact, she told me. Kishot's not quite advised to me before my fight with Dramaturgy.
I doubt Dramaturgy would use the tactic. But do be careful not to let him suck thy blood. Vampires who have their blood sucked by another vampire will see their very existence wrung dry.
Back then, I wasn't interested in sucking blood. But things were different now. I was feeling a bit hungry. Gulp. I began to suck her blood. I'd sunk my fangs into her soft, white skin. No one had to teach me how to suck blood. I just knew. Precisely as a human fed. Kishot began to moan. While her spilt blood returned, her sucked blood didn't. It was because I was draining her energy. One aberration was simply turning against another. You couldn't even call it feeding on her. Sure, feeding on her was what I was doing, but you couldn't call it that. All I was doing was slaying an aberration. I'd used my body to block Kishot's glare. It shouldn't have made it to Hanikawa. If I could keep going and suck Kishot dry, if I could wring every last drop from her, just as she did to me that day. Even as she fell backwards, with me leaning over her, Kishot laughed. So, she was going to die laughing. That was fine with me. But I had to admit, her blood, Kishot Acerola Orion Heart Underblade's blood, tasted better than anything in the world. I felt like I could go on drinking forever, no matter how much of it there was. I wanted to go on drinking forever. It was delicious. Kishot. Just like this, without feeling a hint of fulfillment or an inch of accomplishment, but with unfaltering determination. I will kill you. The life I once saved, I would now end. It was my responsibility. But even after she died and I returned to being human, I wouldn't feel any sense of fulfillment or accomplishment. Her death a bare result. Huh? And then it suddenly came to me. Was I overlooking something? If I was, then what was I overlooking? If it was so important that Hanikawa had to leap out of the PE shed to tell me, what in the world could it be? And why did Kishot become so flustered? Why did the foolish ramblings of someone she considered no more than rations enrage her? She'd shown so much composure up until then. Plus, I'd heard her say that before.
This isn't thy place to speak.
That line. I had heard one like it come from Kishot's mouth before.
Negotiator, or whatever thou may be. Do not speak when it is not thy place to do so, boy.
That was it. Kishot had said that to Oshino. But what had we been talking about? I remembered. Oshino had said,
"And Heart Underblade, I'm pleased. You made Araragi your thrall. But you do intend to turn him back into a human."
I'd pushed Kishot over and had her trapped between my legs. But suddenly, without thinking, I sat up. Of course, this meant removing my fangs from her neck. Then I looked at her expression. I looked at her. Kishot's eyes were still cold, but now blank. Even seeming a bit cloudy. But she was still able to twist her mouth at me.
"What's the matter, servant?"
she said.
"I still have nearly half of my blood left. While I may not be able to move for now, having lost so much blood, I will recover in no time unless ye make haste.
She was probably right. Both about being unable to move and about recovering right away. But more importantly, there was something I had to ask her. I thought I'd asked her my last question, but there was something I needed to ask her. Even if it might not be a good idea to ask. Hey, Kishot.
What is it?
How were you going to turn me back into a human? Kishot clicked her tongue and said,
What does it matter to thee now?
It does matter to me. It's important.
That damned ration. She should have kept her mouth shut.
Kishot castigated Hanekawa, then held her tongue. The castigated Hanekawa slowly walked toward me and Kishot. She put her sweater back on and retied her scarf. Meanwhile, I could tell by her jiggling breasts, worthy of sound effects, boing boing, were this a manga, that she hadn't had time to wear her bra. But Hanekawa seemed not to care as she approached us.
Miss Hard Underblade,
she said solemnly.
Were you planning on having Araragi kill you from the very beginning? So that you could turn Araragi back into a human?
I'd overlooked something. What if it hadn't turned out this way? For example, what if I'd never witnessed Kishot eating Guillotine Cutter? How was Kishot planning on turning me back into a human then? What method existed outside of the one that Hanekawa had discovered? It had never even occurred to me. I had overlooked it. Entirely.
That's enough foolishness from thee, Ration. On what grounds?
Then could you please tell me how you were planning on turning Araragi back into a human? I looked it up, but I couldn't find any other way of turning a vampire back into a human.
Any other way. Any way outside of killing one's master. Any way outside of causing the master-servant relationship to crumble.
Huh, as if I would know. I never had any intention of turning this servant of mine back into a human. It was a lie I told to make him gather my arms and legs. I could not tell too many if it was to return to my perfect form. And indeed, I only made him my thrall for my own convenience.
That's not true. You gathered your missing parts because Araragi wouldn't be able to turn back into a human if you weren't in your complete state, even if he killed you, right? It wasn't going to work unless he killed you after you were whole again.
I thought back to Kishot's excitement. So it wasn't because she'd returned to her perfect form, but rather because that meant the conditions had been met to turn me back into a human?
Fool. It was nothing of the sort.
If that's true, then why did you come here?
Hanekawa asked Kishot in an utterly calm voice. Predator and prey. A greater existence and a lesser existence. But Hanekawa spoke like an equal.
Araragi had a reason to fight you, but you didn't. I know you came up with some labored reason, like wanting to use your full powers or whatever. But you came here to be killed by Araragi, didn't you? That was all, wasn't it? You even made it a 50-50 fight. You intentionally provoked him.
Hanekawa.
You stay quiet, Araragi.
Hanekawa interrupted me.
Of course, I don't have any grounds for it. Something just seems strange, that's all. But just now, when you didn't try to kill me as I came to put a damper on your fight, that's when I knew. You're...
Kishot had used her vampire eyes. She blew away everything around Hanekawa. Yet she didn't harm Hanekawa herself. When Hanekawa had interfered in the same way during my battle with Episode, he didn't think twice about hurling his cross at her. But Kishot didn't attack Hanekawa, the girl she'd called my rations. All she did was try to intimidate her.
Your plan is to die.
Ye should have kept thy mouth shut,
Kishot said, repeating herself.
What good will it do? Ye think this servant of mine could kill me after hearing those words?
What?
As a servant's mistress, I know quite well. He is the kind of fool who would rescue a vampire on the brink of death. Knowing what I do intend, as that boy put it, do ye think this one could suck my blood?
Well, but...
stammered Hanekawa. Kishot gave her a cold look. A cold look with her two blank eyes.
I had thought it would be the hardest step of all. I was vexed by how to make him kill me. That is why I kept mum about the way to turn him back for as long as I could. I was afraid we simply had to plunge into it, but in what I will admit was an unexpected turn of events. The stage was set thanks to Guillotine Cutter. Had I known that eating a single human sufficed to render him so irate, I'd not have worried so.
Kishot looked at me before continuing.
If only I could have simply been the villain, the despised, and slain thus. There was no need for thee to be privy to my intention.
Why not? I muttered, stupefied. But at the same time, if I looked at it that way, everything did check out. Why would you want to do that?
My servant,
replied Kishot.
I had been searching for a place to die.
A place to die? The cause of death for 9/10 of vampires. Suicide. Boredom killed vampires. She was so bored.
And that is why I came to this country. I had not returned since the death of my first thrall. It was not for sightseeing.
But you... She didn't want to die. That's what she said, crying and screaming. Her heart had been stolen. Her limbs had been severed. She just barely escaped with her life.
I thought I was ready to die. That is what I had told myself,
Kishot said. But...
At the very end, I grew scared of death. The thought that after 500 years alive, I would vanish, it began to scare me. That thought that I would be gone scared me so. That is when Yi came along, and when I sought thy help.
And I helped you. I hadn't been moved by any grand notion. What would happen next, what the future would hold, I'd had no notion. I was moved by one thing alone. Her crying face. I didn't want to have to see it. I couldn't bear seeing it.
It was the first time in my life that anyone helped me. No one ever helped me, neither human nor vampire. And as I sat there sucking thy blood, I began to wonder, what was I doing? And so, once I was done sucking thee dry, I decided against devouring thee and made thee my thrall, my second one ever.
Though I'd taken quite some time to awaken, and she thought I'd go into a frenzy, Kishot said. She'd stayed by my side the whole time. She was there to nurse me.
Yet somehow ye awakened. Of course, I would not have objected if ye wished to remain a vampire. But as I had expected, thy wish was to turn back into a human. While I had mulled it over while ye were unconscious, it was then that I decided.
Her tone was infirm, yet firm.
I would die for thy sake.
For my sake?
I would have thee kill me, restoring thy humanity while dying at last. I'd felt as if at last I had discovered a place to die, a place I had been seeking for the past 400 years.
400 years? That was when, her first thrall. She had told me about restoring his humanity.
At the time, I was in fact unable to turn him back into a human, and I planned to use the lessons I learned then this time around. I was unable to die for his sake, unable to die for another, unable to restore his humanity, and so...
You'd do it for me. She would do it to restore my humanity, to help me. For that, she was going to give up her own life?
But don't let it get to thy head, servant. This was my responsibility from the beginning. None of this would have happened if not for my disgraceful behavior. And I would have died then if not for thy help.
Huh? Wait, hold on a second. This situation was impossible. At this rate, my mental preparation... I promised Hanekawa that I was mentally prepared.
What is it now? Crying, are ye?
Then I realized. My cheeks were wet. Why? After all, it didn't matter. None of this changed what I had to do, right? Even if she was trying to die for my sake, she ate people.
What a crybaby I have as a servant. Pitiful.
No! These aren't tears. This, I repeated. This is blood.
Oh?
It's my blood flowing! How in the world were things turning out this way? Kishot was a vampire. She had eaten Guillotine Cutter. She had eaten 6,000 people until now. But even so... And it flows in you too! She was alive. Wasn't it the same then? What I had done. What she was trying to do. What she had done. What I was trying to do. All the same, wasn't it?
Now look at this mess, Ration.
Kishot said.
I'd planned to show him an opening whenever the fancy struck me, so he could slay me. But what does that matter? Because, my dear servant, the only choice left to thee is to kill me.
Why would you say that? My preparation. My mental preparation.
Kill me here, or starting tomorrow I shall eat, oh, let's say 1,000 people a day. Now that I've said that, ye must kill me. No? If I poach thy rations to prove that this is no idle threat, would it move thee into action? Ye saved my life, so be the one to snatch it away. Isn't that the responsible thing to do?
Kishot.
Only one other called me by that name before thee, and ye shall be the last.
I looked toward Hanekawa, as if to ask for her help. But all Hanekawa did was bite her lower lip in response. It seemed to me like a sign of how hopeless the situation was. Even Hanekawa was out of options. Yes, Kishot was right. She hadn't had to divulge her plan until Hanekawa came leaping out of the PE shed. But her intentions didn't change what I had to do. They only made the situation worse, as I can now see. But had I not found out, had I gone on being mistaken about Kishot for the rest of my life, I would have been deprived of even regret and remorse. It would be as a clown if I turned back into a human. How was that acceptable? My wish would come true, but that would be it. It wasn't a happy outcome for anyone. It was just pinning everything on Kishot.
Come,
Kishot said, laughing.
Come, 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 kill me, servant!
Damn it! She was searching for a place to die? She wanted to kill herself? All she was trying to do was escape. It was proof she was trying to run away. It didn't matter how gallant she tried to make it sound. The real her was the one I heard that day under the street lamp.
No way, no way, no way! I don't want to die, I don't want to die, I don't want to die! Help me, help me, help me, please! I can't die, I can't die. I don't want to disappear, I don't want to vanish. Somebody, 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 somebody! I'm sorry!
Oshino! And so, I looked up to the sky and screamed with everything I had. I used the full capacity of my vampire lungs to release the loudest roar I could. Meimei Oshino! And I called his name. The name of that Hawaiian-shirted, frivolous, sleazy man. The name of the man who had known everything from the start, but said nothing. Brazenly, with an unlit cigarette in his mouth.
I know you're out there watching us! So stop acting so important and show yourself! I've got a job for you, bastard!
Hanekawa was looking at me shocked. Kishot was looking at me shocked. But I paid them no attention and continued to scream.
Oshino! I know you're there! You'd have to be watching us with all that crap about being neutral! Now I understand! I don't need any more explanations from you! So come out here! Now that I understand... I know damn well that I'm not the victim and that it's my fault! So come out here! Meimei Oshino!
You don't have to yell. I can hear you fine.
And with the same aimless attitude as always, Oshino was there, sitting on top of the roof of the PE shed. He sat there cross-legged and his face in his palm. He looked like he found it all a big pain in the ass. I don't know when, but he'd suddenly appeared there.
Adanagi, imagine meeting you here. What are the chances?
Oshino.
How so spirited. Something good happened to you?
I have a job for you, I repeated. I focused squarely on him and repeated myself. I want you to do something.
Something?
Oshino jumped down from the roof of the shed and laughed sarcastically. While he didn't look to be the least bit athletic, he made a clean landing without the slightest bend of the knees. Then, he began to approach me with a carefree stride.
That's a tough one.
I'll pay.
It's not an issue of money.
Then what's the issue?
A personal one. What else?
Stop trying to force this on him, he complained, as if refusing. Actually, refusing was exactly what it was.
Hey there, Missy Class President.
Oshino raised a hand to Hanekawa.
This would be our first time meeting, right? Nice to meet you.
Yes.
Hanekawa replied with a nod.
Nice to meet you too. My name is Hanekawa.
It was a good thing I decided to stay around this town, even though all that business with Hard Underblade had wrapped up. If I'd left, I never would have had the chance to meet you.
Is that so? I was convinced that you hated me, Mr. Oshino.
Oh, stop. I could never hate a girl. If Araragi told you something weird, take it from me. He's just making up gossip.
Oshino said shamelessly. How phony was this guy?
You really are amazing, though. Getting this deeply involved when aberrations don't concern you? High school girls really are spirited. Something good happen to you lately?
They do concern me,
Hanekawa asserted.
If it's Araragi's problem, then it's my problem too.
Wow, ain't that friendship?
Oshino stifled a laugh. I didn't know if he could be any more infuriating and insulting.
Or maybe it's youth.
Boy,
Kishot said.
Stay out of this. Wasn't that our agreement?
I don't remember ever making an agreement with you, Hard Underblade. I just wanted to set things up well. You deciding to die so that Araragi could become human again was convenient for me, that's all. And by me, I mean mankind.
That was it. It was probably the same with Guillotine Cutter. When he meekly turned over Kishot's arms, I was puzzled. But Oshino told me how he'd explained the situation. Kishot was agreeing to help turn me back into a human. That's why Guillotine Cutter returned them. Oshino must have used that to forge a compromise. It's how he convinced Guillotine Cutter. That was why he agreed. In that case, he could return her arms without going against his creed. Plus, he'd be able to save face as his religion's archbishop. But, feeling sad about having to part with Kishot, I took my time to talk to her, went to the convenience store, and so on. And because I kept dragging things out and made no moves to kill Kishot, Guillotine Cutter, who thought he'd been tricked by Oshino, proceeded to march into the abandoned school alone. Even Oshino's barrier couldn't conceal Kishot in her perfect form.
So things did play out more or less as I expected, but, you know, Missy Class President, you did make a grand mess of things. Araragi really didn't have to know about that.
I...
Hanekawa said, still unfaltering.
I think that's wrong.
Oh, dear. Well, I've got to admit, you do have one big chest on you.
Excuse me?
Hanekawa held her arms over her breasts, flustered. Bounce, bounce. Upon seeing this, Oshino laughed and replied.
Oh, my mistake. I meant to say you've got one big heart in you.
Yeah, right. It was sexual harassment, plain and simple.
Either way, that's a very wonderful model student-like thing for you to say. But in that case, Lil Missy Class President, what do you suggest we do here?
That's for Araragi to decide,
Hanekawa shot back.
It'd be so awful if you were to end things without knowing the truth, to say the least.
You catch that, Araragi? What a tough spot you've been put in. Missy Class President is so kind she's cruel. There really is something off about her. What exactly does she see in you that lets her trust you like that? So, what'll you do?
Oshino said, looking at me,
and popping an unlit cigarette into his mouth as always.
My original plan was just to watch the aftermath play out. But it looks like just as I thought the ship had sailed, I found myself on it. So fine. I'll listen to your request. This is a job for me as a professional, correct? The fee can be... Ah, that's right. That $5 million I called off. You can owe it to me again.
He made a grin.
So, what is your heart's desire?
I want you to tell me a way to make everyone happy. I told him. That was what I desired, from the bottom of my heart. A method that will keep all of us from being unhappy.
How could something like that possibly exist?
Are you stupid or something? Oshino shrugged.
There's convenient, and then there's that. That's an essay topic for an elementary school ethics class. It's unrealistic.
Oshino, I...
However...
Oshino said, taking the cigarette out of his mouth and putting it back in his pocket. He looked at Hanekawa, then Kishot, then finally me, before saying,
I can think of a way that will make everyone miserable.
As I looked at him, dumbfounded by this reply, he quickly went on to explain.
In other words, the grief created by this incident will be split among everyone evenly. No one's wishes will come true, but if you're okay with that, there is a way.
Everyone would be miserable. Everyone would bear the misery. It would be split, parceled out, and borne by everyone. It wouldn't be all forced onto one person.
To be specific, well, okay. Araragi, you'd stop just short of killing Heart Underblade. You'd take away nearly all of her traits and skills as a vampire, leaving just enough to keep her alive. For your part, Heart Underblade, you will come even closer to death than you were before. So close that you'll be left with nothing. No shadow, no trace, no game, not even a name. You'd become like lowly human mockery of a vampire, unable to eat a human, no matter how hungry.
Oshino continued.
And you, Araragi, that wouldn't allow you to turn back into a human either. But you'd be extremely close to one. You, Araragi, would be like a vampiric mockery of a human. You'd have a few traits and skills as a vampire left, and while you wouldn't technically be able to call yourself human, you would be infinitely far from being a vampire, making you infinitely close to human. You'd, of course, be nothing like a half-vampire. Instead, you'd be an ill-defined, half-baked creature. How fitting.
Fitting?
And, of course, you wouldn't be able to eat humans if you got hungry, either. However, if that were the case, regardless of what happens to you, Araragi, Heart Underblade would starve to death from lack of nutrition. So, Araragi, you would have to constantly be giving Heart Underblade your own blood. The one source of nutrition that would keep Heart Underblade alive would be your flesh and blood. The very thing that will have reduced her to her vulgar state. You would need to devote the rest of your life to Heart Underblade, and Heart Underblade would have to spend the rest of hers nestled up to you.
In that case...
Hanekawa interrupted.
In other words, we humans...
Yes. We would have to give up on slaying this dangerous creature we call a vampire. Any plans to wipe out the Aberration Slayer, the iron-blooded, hot-blooded, yet cold-blooded vampire, as well as her thrall, would have to be abandoned. If her powers were taken away to that extent, then hunters like Dramaturgy and Episode wouldn't even be able to locate her anymore. In other words, the risk would still remain. Heart Underblade and Araragi could become vampires, and they might begin to eat humans. That risk would still remain, and it would be very real.
If we did that, everyone would be miserable. No one's wishes would come true. Kishot would be unable to die. I wouldn't be turning back into a human. Two vampires would be left alive.
How dare ye spew such ridiculous thoughts, boy!
Kishot yelled below me. She was raising her voice. Since I'd already sucked half of her blood, she was unable to move, so yelling was all she could do.
What do ye know, boy? You've not spent a tenth of my time alive. I've had enough of thy self-serving nonsense. I have no wish to go on living in such a form. I will not abase myself and live in disgrace for all to see. This place is where I shall die. I have finally found it. I can finally die! I will die. For my servant's sake! Allow me to die for his sake! Kill me! Kill me! Hurry and kill me now! No part of me wishes to live!
That's what I'm saying. You'll be miserable. Your wish won't come true. Of course, Araragi is the one who gets to make the decision. Missy Class President is exactly right.
Servant!
Kishot turned to me, apparently having decided that she'd get nowhere with Oshino.
As I just said, do not fall for that boy's cajolery! No part of me wishes to live!
Yes, but I was clear-eyed and determined as I replied to her. I was fully aware of my responsibility, of what would happen next and in the future. I want you to live! And then, I stroked her hair. Her golden, her soft, her gentle hair. Yes, the certain proof of my submission to her. I beg you, and I will as many times as you want, as your servant. So please, stop trying to die in style. Live on, awkwardly. Stop trying to find a place to die, and look for a place to live. Kishot's expression was one of despair. But she couldn't move. She couldn't even struggle. Tears began to well in her eyes. Blood-like tears began to well in her eyes, as she did the only thing she could, which was to plead.
Please, servant, I implore thee, please, find it within thyself to kill me. Find a way to kill me and become human again. Think of it as helping me.
I'm sorry, Kishot, I said, calling her by her true name. A name I doubted I'd ever call her again. I'm not helping you. And that was how my spring break came to an end. My nearly hellish spring break. The curtain fell on the last spring break I would ever spend as a high school student. With misery for all and redemption for none. An unhappy ending that was a cruel sight to behold. Chapter 018. Epilogue. Or rather, my life from now. The next day, Karen and Tsukihi, my two little sisters, roused me from my bed for the first time in a while, and I headed to school. My parents said nothing in particular to me. The eldest son of the family, who'd allegedly returned from a two-week-long journey of self-discovery, and my sisters simply had a big laugh at my expense. Since what I'd been up to indeed went beyond words and invited ridicule, I felt like I had no choice but to accept their reactions. In any case, the new school year was starting today. I got on my bicycle and began pedaling towards school. It was also my first time riding one in 2 weeks, but I supposed it took more than a little trip to hell and back to forget how to ride a bike. I arrived at school. Class assignments had been posted in the gym. Whoa. It was a miracle. My name and Hanekawa's were there inside the same box. Well, a miracle might be an overstatement. But my heart leapt a little. I hadn't felt anything close to the same emotion looking at class assignments for my second year. Though I couldn't describe the true nature of that emotion even if I tried, marvelously enough, Hanekawa and I were going to be in the same class. I picked out Hanekawa from among the throng of students scrambling to check what class they were in and called out to her. Such textbook examples of model students were rare, even at Naoetsu High, so I had no trouble finding her. She had changed her hairstyle. Actually, all she'd done was split her one braid into two, one on each side. But even that had quite an effect on the impression she gave off.
Oh, if it isn't Araragi. Howdy.
Hanekawa looked tired. Her shoulders were slumped, and she even seemed to be stooping a little. What a torpid way to start off the new school year. Is something the matter, Miss Hanekawa? What could it be? Did she not like our being in the same class? Although I was beset by paranoia, that didn't seem to be the case. Hanekawa pulled on the sleeve of my uniform to lead me outside the gym. Once we reached a place where we could talk in private, she groaned.
I forgot my bra in the PE shed.
Okay.
They've probably found it by now.
While I had tried to clean up the athletic field as best as I could, There was simply nothing I could do about the door that had been crumpled up by a vampire's eyes like a ball of aluminum foil, so I'd left it behind and gone home. I hadn't gone to the field yet, but the door had disappeared entirely. How could there not be an uproar over that? They'd surely conduct a thorough investigation of the area around the shed.
Well, it was no time to be worrying about that kind of thing. I, Tsubasa Hanakawa, made my mistake of a lifetime, and it will be my lifelong shame.
Don't worry, Hanakawa.
Huh? Why not?
I made sure to grab it.
What did you just say?
I would never let you embarrass yourself like that.
How did you keep it in mind under those circumstances?
Hey, don't say such sad things. During all of spring break, your underwear was always my top priority.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
So yes, top and bottom, together now as a set in my room.
Give them back!
Hanakawa and I spoke there for a little while, since we still had time before the first bell. The topic of our conversation was, of course, vampires. Hanakawa exhibited for me a tidbit of her vast knowledge on the subject.
It's just a theory,
she began.
But vampires sucking human blood apparently means completely different things depending on whether they're feeding or creating a thrall.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard that before, either from her directly or from Oshino.
When it's for food, well, it's for food. But it seems that creating a thrall is more like intercourse.
Intercourse?
I'm being serious,
Hanakawa said.
We speak of sexual appetites and those two desires being similar, don't we? And when you think about it that way, doesn't it make sense that vampires don't like to create thralls too often? As far as her, just 2 in 500 years. I don't really know the vampire take on chastity, but she seems to be a very modest woman.
Modest?
It makes me wonder if her first thrall could have been her lover.
A notion against creating thralls. That's how it had been put to me. A modest vampire. One who wouldn't create a thrall just in order to survive, was it? In that case, when did she create a thrall? That was the question. But we're talking about a human and a vampire, I said.
And couldn't that be why she made him her thrall? The existence of half-vampires seems to confirm such couplings. Or maybe those cases are different. Either way, this is just speculation. But isn't that precisely why she tried to redo things with you? To atone for the other time, so to speak.
To atone? She couldn't turn her first one back into a human. Hence she overlaid me, her second, on her first. That could have been it.
I'm sure she didn't want to be killed by those 3 expert vampire hunters. But maybe when she came across you, she truly did find the right place to die. It was when she encountered her second thrall.
Place to die, huh?
Well, when you think about it, the moment she relinquished almost all of her abilities as a vampire by making you her thrall, when she relinquished the ability to suck blood, she may have already been prepared to starve to death. I mean, vampires die if they don't suck blood.
That's right.
But in order to turn you back into a human, she couldn't allow herself to starve to death.
You know, last evening, she started out by inviting me to live with her for eternity, but if I'd accepted her invitation, I wonder what she had in mind.
Exactly that, I think.
Exactly that?
Even if you can't live alone, if it's with someone else, you can. 2's better than 1, and apparently just 2 is better than 3. That sort of thing. Dunno,
Hanakawa said. Ditto, I said to that.
The wound.
Hmm?
It's still there,
Hanakawa said, looking at my neck. The 2 fang marks on my neck. Oops, isn't my collar hiding them?
People in the know might notice.
Crossing her arms, Hanakawa examined my neck from all sorts of angles.
Plus, there's gym class and stuff. I think it might be better for you to grow out your hair a bit.
Taking care of it's gonna be a pain.
How vampiric are you still anyway?
I still have to find out the extent for myself, but well, my body seems to heal a lot better than before. I think my gums bleed less when I brush my teeth.
What a drab.
It is what it is. If we're to give it a positive spin, I'd say I was able to turn back into a human, but not without some lasting side effects.
I see. Side effects, huh?
Well, whether or not I'm human now, just being able to be out in the sun like this feels like a world of difference.
How forward-looking.
As she said that, Hanekawa's bashful smile, too, looked much more dazzling under the sun.
Well, don't ever hesitate to ask me if you need help with something. I'll be happy to lend you a shoulder to rub anytime.
All right. I'll let you know if I ever want to rub them. You bet I'll be doing some research before next time, and I'm going to be emotionally prepared for it as well. Because I want to make sure it feels good for you when I get my hands on them.
We're talking about my shoulders, right?
Huh? Yeah, sure, I guess.
That's an awfully vague answer.
She grimaced. But at any rate, Hanekawa held her right hand out toward me.
Now that we're in the same class, I'm gonna make sure you turn your life around.
What am I, a juvenile delinquent?
You lost your life and turned once, didn't you?
An apt expression for an undead guy, Hanekawa deadpanned.
Let's make this a good year, Araragi.
Yeah, and not just this year. Let's make this good, for now and ever. Maybe not as long as an eternity, but a good now and ever. I clasped Hanekawa's right hand. We shook hands like true friends. We then headed to class, where our homeroom teacher gave an outline of the school year and trimester to come. But that part was the same as ever. He told us the class representatives would be voted on tomorrow, and that we should think about who would be suitable. Of course, I would be voting for Hanekawa. As for which of the boys was getting my vote, who cares? And after class, I headed to the abandoned cram school alone. I told Hanekawa where I was going. I considered going together with her, but then, this was my responsibility. And mine alone. After about 20 minutes on my bicycle, I arrived. I entered onto the property through a hole in the fence, as if it was a friend's familiar house, or rather, my own. Come to think of it, this was my first time studying the building from the outside during the day. Looking at it under the sun, it was even more dilapidated than I expected. It was decaying and exhausted. It was a corpse of a building. So that's how it appeared to human eyes. Casting mine down, I entered the ruins, and then climbed the stairs. I got to the second floor, and kept going. I was headed to the fourth floor. She was no longer vulnerable to sunlight, because she was no longer a vampire. I checked the classroom with the hole ripped through its ceiling, but no one was there. When I opened the door to the next classroom over, though the door seemed to have its own mechanical problems, I found Oshino inside.
Hey there. You're late, Araragi. I've been waiting for ages.
He greeted me in a carefree tone. He wore, as always, a Hawaiian shirt. Lying on a slapdash bed made of desks, he hardly seemed to have been waiting for me. But there was no point in taking this guy to task about every little thing.
That uniform suits you, Araragi. I thought you were someone else.
Well, I am a student, after all.
Oh, right. It had slipped my mind. Yeah. You were the hero of a super-powered school action series.
That's so long ago that I don't even know if it really happened. And in any case, I wasn't cut out to be the hero. I wasn't even fit to be the villain or the monster. What I was now was a simple high school student. After all, and all in all, I was a student. Even if I wasn't entirely human.
I see. And Missy class president isn't with you?
Nope, I'm alone. Would it have been better if she came?
Nah, it doesn't matter either way for this.
By the by, continued Oshino.
If you don't mind me voicing my concerns, beware Missy class president, Araragi. Don't take your eyes off of her. That girl is a little too precarious. Even this time around, she gave every last one of us the run, you and me included. If things were to ever center around her, to be quite honest, even I don't know what might happen.
Yeah. You don't have to tell me to keep an eye on her, I answered. We're friends.
Are you now? Well, it's not like I sold you a warranty on my services or anything. But I'd like to see how you're going to hold up. So I'm staying here in these ruins for a while. I looked all around, but this abandoned cram school still seems the comfiest place. Come talk to me if you ever need help.
Your help is pretty expensive.
It's not expensive. I'm properly compensated.
Oshino said before pointing to a corner of the classroom with his unlit cigarette.
All right. Why don't we get round number one started?
In the corner of the classroom, there sat a blonde girl. She held her knees in her arms. A petite girl, who looked to be about 8. Not 27. Not 17. Not 12. Not even 10. A blonde 8-year-old girl. And she glared at me with threatening eyes. Really? I didn't know what to call her. This girl with no shadow, no trace, no game, not even a name. A husk of a vampire. The dregs of a beautiful demon. And an unforgettable being for me. Really, I'm sorry. I approached her. I sat next to where she sat and hugged her. If you ever want to kill me, go ahead. She said nothing. She wasn't going to say anything to me anymore. As if to sulk even harder, she struggled a little. But soon she calmed down and went for my neck, still not saying a word, and chomped down. I felt a prick of pain, along with an intoxicating feeling.
I don't think this is right either,
Oshino said airily behind me.
I guess you could call it human egotism? The disgust you felt over vampires eating humans is really no different from a cute little kitty eating a mouse turning people off. And now, in a way, you've chosen to keep a vampire as a pet, having filed down its fangs, plucked out its claws, crushed its throat, and castrated it. You, who were made a pet, turned around and made your master your pet. That's all there is to this story. It's certainly no heart warmer. A human who tried to sacrifice his life for a vampire. And a vampire who tried to sacrifice hers for a human. Sounds like blood begetting blood. But I guess blood is thicker than water. I don't intend on inserting myself into this situation, since this is just work for me. But if you ever begin to hate yourself over this, Adaragi, just let me know, and I'll do something about it.
I'm never going to start hating anything about this, I answered as the girl sucked my blood. I'm doing this because I want to.
Then do as you want.
Even as Oshino's uncaring repartee came from behind me, I embraced the girl's petite body, which seemed so fragile that mere human arms might crush it if I held it too tight. Having wounded each other, the two of us licked each other's wounds. Damaged goods both, we sought out each other. If you want to die tomorrow, I'm ready for my life to end tomorrow. If you care to live for today, then so will I. I vowed out loud. Thus begins the tale of the wounded ones. A tale of blood that splattered red and dried up black. The tale of our never-to-heal, precious wound. I will tell it to no one.
Afterward. Some people like to tell fortunes, or judge personalities based on blood types, saying, for example, that type O's are natural leaders, while type A's are highly strung. The type B's are free spirits, while type AB's march to their own drum. But then, you should probably want your leaders to be a little on the highly strung side. And really, free spirit is just another way to say, marches to his own drum. And if you substituted self-centered for free spirit, what's the difference between a self-centered person and a very fussy, highly strung person? Not to mention that if you think it's good for leaders to have strong, unshakable wills, they'd need to march to their own drum. And once you start thinking about it that way, you have no choice but to point out that, hey, wait a second, they all mean the same thing. Of course, the same could be said for all fortune-telling, none more so than zodiac astrology. But they only split blood-type fortunes into 4 types. And that simplicity paradoxically seems to be lending the whole affair its credibility. If you've ever subjected yourself to it, I bet when you gave your blood type you were told, ah, I knew it. But that's the trick. And it's not hard to imagine being told, ah, I knew it, no matter what type you say you are. Also, I bet the simplest way to guess people's blood type, in Japan at least, is to ignore everything about their personality and to declare, you're a type A, aren't you? That's because A is the most common blood type among Japanese people. I guess a little further in the future we might have things like DNA fortunes or genetic fortunes, but to be honest, I don't think they'll be any better than the blood type fortunes we have today. This book consists of Koyomi Vamp. The Story of Koyomi Araragi. The narrator from my previous work, Bakemonogatari. Though I called it my previous work, I don't mind at all if you read this one first. In fact, chronologically speaking, this one comes first. So I dare say the Kizumonogatari first order is just as legit as the opposite order. It's the tale of Koyomi Araragi and the vampire Kiss-shot Acerolaorian Heart Underblade. It's also the tale of Koyomi Araragi meeting Tsubasa Hanakawa for the first time. If Bakemonogatari is the novel I wrote entirely to entertain myself, then Kizumonogatari is a novel I wrote entirely in a fifth to entertain myself. In fact, these stories should have been sealed off forever, never to be espied, their author fully satisfied the moment he put down his pen. But by some mistake, they were turned into books, beautifully adorned with the illustrator Vofan's impressive skills, and published for the world to see. When I confront myself with this fact, I don't feel the need to thank various people as much as the need to do some very serious reflection on my own professionalism. Then again, the occasional book like this doesn't seem like it could hurt, so I would appreciate your magnanimity. Of course, if you do find the Monogatari series, which I've written so exhaustively I feel there's nothing left I could possibly add, to be even the least bit entertaining, then there's no greater joy for me. Fueled by that joy, I'll get back to actual work starting tomorrow. Nishio Ishin. Palindromic Nishio Ishin made his debut as a novelist when he was 20. A famously prolific author, he is known to publish more than a book per month at times. With his inexorable rise, he's become the leading light of a younger generation of writers who began their careers in the 21st century. Titles by him previously published in English include the first two books of the Zaragoto Mystery Cycle, and the novelizations Holic, Another Holic, and Death Note, Another Note, The Los Angeles BB Murder Cases. The Monogatari series, widely considered his masterpiece to date, makes its first appearance in English with this volume. Illustrator Vofan, lauded as the Magician of Light and Shadow, hails from Taiwan.
Kizumonogatari, Wound Tale, directed by Tony Oliver. Koyomi Araragi, voiced by Eric Kimmerer. Kiss-shot and Others, voiced by Christina V. Meme Oshino and Others, voiced by Keith Silverstein. Dialogue recording and sound editing by Erica Escames. Audio production at Bang Zoom Studios. Copyright 2008, Nishio Ishin, all rights reserved. First published in Japan in 2008 by Kodansha Limited Tokyo. Publication rights for this English edition arranged through Kodansha Limited Tokyo. Published by Vertical Incorporated New York. 2015, first edition.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.